My topic tonight is everyday mindfulness, which is nothing special, really. It's just the mindfulness that you take with you every day. Its enemy, yeah, that's kind of a strong word, but what keeps us from having it is kind of tunnel vision that we get when we're focused on what we want, where we're aiming to go, and the obstacles and advantages that we encounter along the way. And we get caught up in our reaction to those obstacles and advantages. Without the space that mindfulness provides between the event and our reaction to it, it helps if we can hold a firm intention to step back mentally every so often and just observe our internal experience, what we're feeling, what our mood is, what attitude we bring to what we perceive the situation to be. What I'm talking about basically are the foundations of mindfulness, and this is the third foundation of mind. Insight to look inward and not just recognize what's happened, but how it affects us, what our, what in Bhutan they're calling gross national happiness, what's our gross personal happiness at the moment. That's part of mindfulness. That doesn't mean that we're always like, you know, hypochondriacs fussing about, am I happy now? But just seeing, you know, what's going on. What is the state of the being that we are? This will be helped by having this habit of checking in with the body. The same way that we have in meditation this habit of returning to the breath every so often. You know, there's this idea that we sit down and meditate and we stay with the breath. Not really. Not with mindfulness meditation. We come back to the breath again and again. And everyday mindfulness is the same thing. We come back to our internal experience, which is expressed in the body every so often. Every mind state we have is worth investigating. There's always something to learn. And the strong ones are often the most informative. One of the fast ways to learn what they have to teach us is to ask, why is this so strong? Does the power of this mind state urge us to act abruptly? This is a great opportunity to exercise judgment, discernment, what is often interpreted or referred to in Buddhist teachings as wisdom. This is a great wisdom-building opportunity when we can see that we're in the midst of a powerful reaction. And I'm not saying that every time we have a powerful reaction, we have to respond wisely. We're not going to, you know, not for a while, not until, you know, we've had some practice with this. But we have the opportunity, and it's such a wonderful way to be educated about the nature of our minds and to become friends with them on a basis other than they're having all the power. So, you know, as I said, our attention is naturally attracted to powerful events, whether they're positive or negative. Unfortunately, kind of a Darwinian principle here, it's mostly attracted to the negative, because if we notice that, our chances of surviving are a little better. And we also tend to space out when things are really calm. We get bored. And that's characteristics, really, of all phenomena, that we will categorize them as positive, negative, or neither, just in this gray zone where they're just not very sexy. There's a really important teaching in Zen. It's the idea of nothing special. There's an early woman Western teacher called Charlotte Joko Beck. You may have heard of her. I've paid an indirect tribute to her in naming tonight's talk Everyday Mindfulness, because she has a series of books called Everyday Zen. And in her book, Everyday Zen, Love and Work, she said, if we can accept things just the way they are, we're not going to be greatly upset by anything. And I don't mean to go all Mary Oliver about this. It's not about trying to see wonderful things about grasshoppers, but it's about letting each moment's experience be just what it is, and doing that by turning our attention to what is here now and holding our attention there with tender acceptance of whatever we see and however it affects us. Just be there with it. Nothing special. The irony is, I'll let you in on a little secret, that just by doing this, all of experience acquires a glow of wonder. Okay, here is a poem that appears in Insight Meditation Center's 2015 anthology, Passing It On. It's entitled Serenity by Rebecca Dixon. I was a twister of emotion, cutting through my life a swath of destruction. It seemed to be life itself, this intensity, as if the trouble to speak could only be justified by a tremendous noise. Everything I encountered yielded to my fervor until the day I came to the edge of life and saw the emptiness embracing all experience. It quieted me like a divine voice that stills the waters. In the face of just this moment, all vehemence seemed a child's pretense. And everything in its simplicity stood silent, sacred, in the miracle of being exactly what it is. Now, having said that we shouldn't look for big, powerful experiences or marvelous grasshoppers. I just want to, you know, say again, make it clear that something wonderful does happen when we really see the ordinary, the nothing special in our lives. Because by and large, this is what our lives are composed of. And being there, this tender acceptance of attention, transforms it. So the trick is not to seek out that wonder, but to allow ourselves to recognize and feel it. So here's another poem of mine, same anthology. Feeling the fragility of all things dear and fleeting. My heart opens like a wound, salved with love, and bound by every breath I take to the sweet, unguarded mystery of life. Mindfulness enables us to meet our wounds with tenderness, to meet our anger with acceptance, our craving with compassion, our joy with sympathetic joy. We can actually be glad for ourselves that we're happy. We can meet our love with deep respect. Mindfulness provides us the equanimity to hold all this in a few fleeting moments as we swing from one task to another in our ordinary lives, our everyday lives. So let's go back to how we can live this way. It makes good poetry, but can it really be our lives? Well, emphatically, yes, it can. When I look back to the years before I began to practice, I see the mess made by the person in that first poem. A twister of emotion. I remember how painful and confusing it was to live with all that reactivity. And I can't imagine accepting that life now. What has changed my life, first and foremost, is many years of disciplined meditation. I used to say I sit every day, even when I don't want to. And there were many days when I didn't want to. I was too busy. I was so absorbed in the ongoing drama of the moment that it was really hard to break away. But I had this firm intention that I was going to sit every day, and I had a daily deadline. I had to finish my meditation before it got dark. So no matter what, that was my intention, and it was supported by my knowledge that for me, meditation is better pain control than anything medicine has to offer. I'm blessed with chronic pain. It's an advantage in this practice, which I honor, but I certainly don't recommend it for other people. You know, it's if you don't have that advantage, there are other ways. And those other advantages made themselves apparent in less than a year of practicing every day. And in about that time, I could clearly see the improvement that this regular practice had made in my life, I was infinitely more content. And I think a way to explain what I mean by content is serene joy. I had a lot of that in my life, even after a year. My judgment was way better than it had been. I found that I enjoyed my time with other people more than I had a year earlier. And probably as a result of all of the above, my relationships really improved. So these are gifts of the practice that everyone gets. I've been teaching a long time now. I've seen a lot of people begin and progress, and I've seen these things happen in their lives. And when we recognize them and their tremendous value, it helps us want to practice more so that it becomes automatic. It just becomes a part of the day, like, you know, sun going from one horizon to the other. Somewhere in there, there's meditation. And then for me, there was a gradual transition that happened. To paraphrase what Sharda Rogel said to me once, I stopped struggling to fit my practice into my life when I fit my life into my practice. The next step probably took about, 10 to 12 years, but with making a conscious effort, again, having this firm intention to be as mindful as possible, as often as possible during the day, it began to just happen. And my teachers have told me, many, many teachers have told me, that this practice of ours has a wisdom and a momentum of its own. I wasn't looking for that to happen, but it was clearly recognizable about a decade ago. So that's, about 12 years into my practice. It takes a lot of resolve to be present with everything. Anything. Everything. There has to be an intention, a conscious intent to be there for it. But when that resolve is in place, there are great payoffs, and they make it get easier steadily. And I have some examples. About a year ago, I was in a bang accident, and there were two passengers in my car. And right away, as soon as I was aware of what had happened, my body felt the stress of this event. It hit me like that other car hit my car. But my mind stayed calm. And once I was assured that my passengers and the other driver were unhurt, that tension settled down a lot. And I was able, I was a little shaking, a little bit. I'm not, the Iron Man or anything. But I was able to get the car off the road and take care of the paperwork and call the insurance company and, get the business taken care of and then go to the cafe for breakfast where we were headed, there was plenty of space in my everyday mindfulness to hold all of that event and all of the stuff that was there inside me as a result, and still enjoy my omelet. I was quite happy to tuck into a nice breakfast after that. So you might think that there was little in this scenario that was magical or wonderful, but there was. No one was hurt. That was worth a celebration, and a heartfelt one. So another example is the past 2 weeks, which in my life have been blah. I got really sick with a nasty virus, and I had to cancel several important activities, which some of you may know. And I had to just hang out at home without being able to do really anything at all. I mean, it was blah. A lot of it. I spent a lot of time watching thoughts arise about how unpleasant the experience was. But as long as I watched those thoughts, they did me no harm. There was one day when not only wasn't I getting any better, but I was feeling like I was getting worse. And I was really concerned that I may need to go to the hospital. I was home alone. And my thoughts became what you might call very absorbing. Emotionally, I began to feel as bad as I felt physically. And this was the only day out of 2 weeks of being pretty sick that I really succumbed to this kind of reactivity. But then I saw what was happening, and I stepped back from the thoughts, and they, you know, they were thoughts about, oh, being in a hospital bed is so miserable. And once I got a little space from thoughts like that, mindfulness opened up enough room for me to exercise some good judgment. And I called the Kaiser advice nurse, you know, and got a little professional perspective on the thing and an appointment to go see my doc the next day. And I went right back to sleep after that. So overall, this illness was a big bore, but by just sticking with it moment by moment, mindfully, it was not really unpleasant. I, be quite honest, I don't want to repeat it, but you know, there probably will eventually be other illnesses, and I know I can meet them too, mindfully, with equanimity. Just as sitting every day can become so ingrained that it's almost automatic, so can mindfulness during the day. When we do tasks that take concentration, we concentrate on them. Then we return to a more spacious awareness of everyday mindfulness, which allows us to see how each phenomenon registers in our body-mind. Something will come up and take us away, and then we come back. Nothing special. That's just what is, and we celebrate and come back and appreciate what we learned from it. Back and forth, over and over. No big deal. As Charlotte Jokobek said, we learn in our guts, not just in our brain, that a life of joy is not in seeking happiness, but in experiencing and simply being the circumstances of our life as they are. Not in fulfilling personal wants, but in fulfilling the needs of life. Thank you.